Okay.
I got my
ready? Okay. For the okay. Long this round. Is the cutest thing ever. So I have a fourth grader, and we were out to get a. I just keep knocking off the furniture the in this room. Anyhow, I'm just too big for this room.
Stop it.
So I mean,
you're
my
like
personality.
Alice in yeah.
Oh yeah.
You're okay. Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah. Brunette and kind of Sephardic. So we were getting my son a haircut, and then he did something at the counter with my husband. I was like, "What are you guys doing?" They're like, "Never mind." And then about 5 minutes later, when we left the shop, my son brought over for me the gift that he had secretly bought me in this salon / boutique for kids. And guess what it was? Well, so you already think it's cute, but wait till I tell you. Oh my gosh, I love him so much. He said, "Here is a feminist deck of cards for you." It's a kid's deck of cards with famous figures on it, including Sally Ride and Ella Fitzgerald and Marie Curie.
What kids salon are you going to?
Well, it's called Kids Club product placement. But anyway,
the one in U Village. Yeah.
But I was okay. Product placement. But I was like, oh my gosh, it was his idea, and my husband fronted the money, and then they surprised me and gave it to me, and he said, "You can use it on your podcast, Mom." And I thought, this is just the cutest thing I've ever seen. And it had it's a deck of repeating six different women, and I thought, this is amazing. And you know what's funny is when he first gave it to me, when I didn't realize it was only six, I said, "Oh, we can play Old Maid with it." Oh. Which just shows you like what a ridiculous person I am.
Oh my God.
And then I said, "Oh, actually, that's wrong. We can't do that. Let's not
no,
do
no,
that.
No,
Let's
no,
play
no,
Go
no,
Fish."
No. Yeah, exactly. Doesn't it feel good when you see your kids starting to like embrace the you-ness that exists separate from them, right? Because you as mom have always been...
I thought you said Eunice, like E-U-N-I-C. Oh, like, I was like, is this a term
like
I don't
Eunice?
Know?
Yeah, no, like in What's Up,
Eunice?
Doc? Yeah. Like Madeline Kahn's character in What's Up, Doc? No, like the person that you are that is not mom.
Yes.
Like the person that you are who is a working woman.
It's seeping in.
Yes.
It's
God, that
like,
feels good. Yeah. You're doing a good job, mama.
Fist bump.
Fist bump.
You're listening to Mouthy, Messy, Mandatory. I'm Rooney.
I'm Katie. And today we are going to be taking stock of our republic because apparently we live in a country now where we need to be locking up babies in cages, but we do need to extend the olive branch of peace and progressiveness with fucking North Korea. Up is down is up. I don't even
know
what's
going on. Happening.
Cats and dogs living together.
What's so wrong about a dictator?
Don't even know anymore.
I don't know anymore.
It all makes sense.
Well,
but first things first, let's talk about the immigration
thing.
Yeah,
let's do it.
Because we kind of skipped over it the last time we talked about it because it is such a painful story to be talking about. I mean,
I think sometimes when a news story is so giant or seems so disproportionate from what we're used to, it's almost easy for me to kind of block it out. Like, wait, what? Similarly, if we know how big our debt is, for example, that's just such an incomprehensible number.
Yeah.
But maybe individually we know, if we find out how much we're personally in debt, we can understand that. So that's why I think a personal narrative or smaller stories about the immigration issue currently is helpful, at least for me. A friend of mine had been listening to our show a lot, and then she read an article about two women in Seattle who had been separated from their children. They were immigrants who had been detained here. And the idea of it happening locally was what really kind of tipped the balance for her and made her feel like, whoa, I really need to do something.
See, and I find the exact opposite to be true, because when I am like scrolling my Facebook feed and someone has posted a photograph of like a 3-year-old baby in a cage crying alone, it is...
Right, it's too much.
Like, it's too much for me. It's too hard to think about these families. I'm like, I can't emotional right now.
Yeah.
No, but it's really, really devastating because if you think about these kids who are so scared and the parents who are also scared and are also wrestling with, like, shame and powerlessness and knowing that, like, their kids are out there and they put them in a situation.
Well, also, if they make a false move or do anything too aggressive, what if they get thrown out of the country and their kid is still here? And we were talking about how you did some research and found how many detention centers there are in our country.
Oh, my gosh. I read on Wikipedia there are more than 900 detention centers in the U.S., and at any given time, more than 360 of them are in operation, are actively in operation. And that includes not only kind of the big detention centers like the one here in Seattle, the Northwest Detention Center that has about 1,500 beds, but also smaller facilities. But I think the thing about this story that I keep coming back to is just the idea that when we interact with a story like this, as people who live in Washington, I don't live in Texas.
Right.
I don't work in law enforcement. I don't live in D.C. I am not a lawmaker. I am a mom driving my little Subaru around with seven empty coffee cups rattling around in the back seat. What can I do? I can donate to the ACLU. I can tweet about it. I can Facebook about it. And then it's kind of like, close the file. I've done everything I can do is what it feels like.
But you actually looked up enddislocation.org, which is this website that has stats on immigration.
Yeah, it's end isolation. End isolation and hopefully dislocation. Yeah.
It says that right here, but I guess I'm not a quick reader. Anyway, that's not funny. So I went to endisolation.org because it has so many, it lists all the detention centers and it has the stats for the different amounts of immigrants have been seeking asylum in our country. So apparently, prior to the 1980s, there were only about 30 people in immigration detention centers each day.
Yeah.
30 each day. Now, it's about 34,000 each day in our country. And they're not just in Arizona. They're not just in Texas. There are actually 120 people being detained here in Washington right now.
Exactly. There are 120 people. And these are the asylees that have come, you know, basically in the last 2 months and who have not broken any laws and who presented themselves at the border and said, I am fleeing gang violence. I am fleeing domestic violence. I am fleeing state violence. Please help me. And we said, no, actually, we're going to destroy your family and send you to different states and not let you communicate with each other. And that's apparently the America that we're living in now. It's
And the two women in the story that brought the issue to, you know, to the forefront for my friend were separated from their young daughters in mid-May. They're currently being held here in Washington, and they don't know what has happened to their daughters. So their young daughters are basically alone, separated from their mothers, and these children don't receive any kind of counseling. We also know, I think you found out, that people who are put in detention centers often are made to do labor.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. That's a whole other thing. So, for example, at the Northwest Detention Center, one guy was beaten when he asked a guard to pay one of the laborers, one of the detainees, with actual money instead of chips.
Yep.
Like, this detention center that is run by the way, a for-profit company, GEO Group, and is subsidized by our government and cleared $2 billion last year.
That's right.
Pays its labor in snack food.
Yeah, so let's just say it cost $2 billion for taxpayers last year to keep these people locked up.
Yep, exactly, exactly.
And that's about $23,000. It costs $23,000 per person to deport.
Yeah, so all of this to say, as I have taken the time to learn about this, first of all, it is really, really easy to check out of stories like this.
Yes.
Because it is devastating and heartbreaking, not just on a level of like, I'm a mom, my kids are these kids' age. If I were in a situation like this, I would run from state violence and I would ask for help. And if this happened, I would be devastated. So not just in that way is it hard, but it's also hard as Americans, feeling this sense of shame, of national shame, that we have fallen so hard and so fast from who we thought we were. It's really, really easy to want to just like turn it off and walk away.
And you and I were talking about that because we cover a lot of different stories for the show, and I actually tuned out. I did. I'll be honest about it. It's something that I was thinking was too big for me to take a bite out of, and I didn't understand it, and I didn't want to think about it because there's so much to deal with already. But once I started to engage, the fact that this is happening in our country and the fact that we used to be a pinnacle for human rights and the fact that we are now, you know, this country has been deteriorating on a lot of different fronts, but most people can get behind the wrongness of separating kids from their families. Yep. And these kids who are coming to our borders with their parents, these people are vulnerable to rape, to being trafficked, to abuse. They're not just people who are trying to, quote, mooch off of our government and our country's, you know, charity.
Yep, I totally agree. It's really, really important to remember that even though it is painful and hard to confront all of these facts of what is actually happening, you have to find a way to stay in it. Like, you have to find a way to stay in it. Because if you don't, you're basically looking at that picture of that kid and just walking away. So anything that you can imagine doing on a federal level to address an issue that feels huge, like immigration, can also be applied in your actual neighborhood. And the people that you're gonna be talked to in your neighborhood actually need you a lot more than people like big national figures like Department of Homeland Security Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen. However, that does not mean that you shouldn't feel free to tweet at Secretary Nielsen,
which
at Sec Nielsen.
Every
single tweet that she does, you should be responding to ask her to hashtag end family separation, which I have been doing. And I wanted to bring this up because one of the women who responded to Secretary Nielsen's tweet, who responded to my tweet to Secretary Nielsen, basically said, if you commit a crime, you'll be separated from your family. That's how it's always been in America. And I don't understand why these illegal aliens should be any different. And to that person, and I kind of just wanted to do a PSA here really quickly, because it's important to understand that the people, the asylees that we are talking about, people who are fleeing state violence and coming to America to ask for help, have not broken the law. They have not crossed into America illegally. What they do, what asylum seekers do, is they present themselves at a checkpoint and say, I am seeking asylum. I am asking for help. Please begin the process. And at that point, they have to prove a credible fear. They have a series of interviews that they have to do.
This is the way it's always been.
This
is not sneaking over the border. This is separate. And this is something that I think people get confused by. So there is coming to our border and seeking asylum through the channels that have always been open. You go, you present yourself. Then there's sneaking over the border. This person, Katie, sounds like she did not understand the difference or is conflating people who come for asylum with people who are breaking laws. How can a child who is escaping gang violence or human trafficking have committed a crime in our country?
Exactly. Well, and let's call her Shmuley because I don't like saying this person over and over again. So Shmuley also thinks that somebody has told Shmuley, I don't know who, that the choice on the table here is admit asylees or pay for everything else America wants. And Shmuley thinks that Americans should come first because Shmuley is a nationalist, like so many people are, as it turns out. But
you could be a nationalist, wait, and care about people and children?
You can be patriotic and empathetic. That is a real thing that
can
happen.
There's room inside for everything.
Exactly. But so she actually said to me, like, Americans are dying on the streets right now. I'd rather, help them than these illegal aliens. And I hope the way that I'm saying illegal aliens demonstrates my contempt for that term.
We don't really say that.
Yeah, this is actually a human being who is legal.
Right.
All Twitter fighting aside, Shmuley, get your facts straight, okay?
Yeah.
Because she's also pissed about our taxpayer dollars funding asylees. Shut the fuck up. $2 billion of our taxpayer dollars are going to pay for detention.
Exactly.
Like, what could we do for the Americans dying in the streets right now with $2 billion instead of detaining asylees illegally to pay for for-profit corporations' bonuses?
All
of the blood has drained out of my talking place into my punching muscles.
So let me just help. I totally appreciate what you're saying here.
Thank you.
And I think that this speaks to big issues that people don't have all the facts about, which is common. You can be super educated, not have all the facts. You can be not educated and not have all the facts. But one thing to know is that there are many issues that seem insurmountable in our country, in our world. It seems like, how can I help? This is where voting takes, comes in. This is where
voting.
You can vote. This is where I know. It's crazy, but it just might work. It's grassroots, boots on the ground kind of thing. And we were talking about what are some bigger issues in our world, in our community that feel insurmountable to us, and what can we do to kind of take a bite out of them. And what I was thinking about was homelessness, because at least in our city, and of course in New York and Los Angeles, Seattle, we're the top cities for homelessness populations. And what I have found is that instead of trying to just deal with a homelessness balloon here, my big project is to help children who are the victims of homelessness. And this is what we were talking about, is maybe you can find one way to get into an issue that will help you feel like you're doing something. Sure, there's money to donate. Sure, there's supplies you can donate. But there's also time, if you want to do time. So you want to go clean up some facility that helps children. You want to donate toys. There's a Playtime Foundation for homeless kids in DC, for example, and they want children to have time to play, because that is so important to their mental health and emotional well-being, and gives them the resilience and kind of positive experience to help them then move on in their lives.
Yep.
Those are very simple ways
that you or someone can take a personal cause and kind of make an impact.
Exactly. And even if you want to keep it political, you don't have to be just tweeting the Secretary of Department of Homeland Security unless it feels good in your heart, like it feels good in my heart. You know, our state attorney general, Bob Ferguson, is actually suing GEO, which is the company that runs the private detention center in our city, for failing to pay minimum wage for the labor. Contact your state AG. That person is accountable to you. Don't just contact, you know, your senators who serve in the National Senate. Contact your state senators and talk to them about the issues that you care about, whether that is homelessness. How are they going to make that a legislative priority? The midterms are coming up. You have so much power as a voter to set the agenda and to mm-hmm. set priorities for your elected officials.
So if something is bothering you, has gotten under your skin, it's something you really want to change, but you don't know how, you can find a way in that speaks to you, that makes you feel motivated, that makes you feel like you've done something, whether it is calling a representative, whether it is donating goods, money, time. There is a way into the issue to help.
But you can only do that if you actually pay attention and stay with the story, even if it's really, really, really hard. It will be worth it, I promise you.
Hi, I'm Sarah Leibovitz, a producer at Large Media. Do you love listening to the hilarious and insightful tones of Katie and Ronit on the regular? Wish you had more podcasts to fill your commute the other 6 days of the week? Well, be sure to keep your eyes and ears open, because the Large Network is coming your way. Learn more at larjmedia.com. And remember, when you want to go big, go large.
Okay.
I feel like the air just went out of the room because I know what we're about to talk about.
Yeah, what a world we live in, where I'm watching footage of the American flag standing next to the North Korean flag, and the President of the United States extending his hand to the dictator.
He's a really great guy.
He's such a great guy.
He's just a really great guy.
And you know the first thing I thought? This makes sense. Yeah, this totally makes sense. This feels right in the context of the world that we're living in right now.
So Trump. Trump and okay. Kim. We'll call him Kim. He's yep. Chancellor Kim. We'll call him Kim. Why? Why now? Is it because midterms are coming?
Yeah, well, what? So they recently met in Singapore and they signed an agreement.
Very airy document. And yeah. It's funny because I think that Trump called it like a very substantial, specific document. And then when people got a closer look, a lot of people, talking about journalists and people who are pundits, were saying that there's really nothing substantial there. No. There are no promises. It's supposed to be about dismantling North Koreans,
nuclear capability. Korea, yeah. So the whole thing about this summit is that it was months in the making. It finally happened in Singapore. Trump and Kim made a huge deal about what statesmen they are for making this summit happen. And then at the end of the day of 6 hours of conversation, these two guys sign a paper that basically says, we are going to continue to try to do the things that we've considered doing in the past. Historic. Stop it. That's not a real thing that you just signed. But my big question about this situation is why are people acting as if this is a significant document, while the Iran deal, which was specific, which had accountability, which had timelines, which was formed in relationship with allies.
Because Obama can't win.
It's garbage.
Obama, progressives, and Democrats can't win because the conservatives are always going to say that, we suck. And Trump can do no wrong.
Is this just reactionism again?
So one thing is this. The only good part about this is that this is better than where we were 6 months ago when nuclear war was being threatened.
Because they signed this paper, they didn't say we're not going to use nuclear weapons. They said we're going to think and feel things about denuclearization.
We're going to think about potentially in the future, maybe not replenishing our nuclear program.
I would not accept that apology from my five-year-old.
Furthermore, Trump threw in at the last minute the idea that the South Korean and American armed forces can't do military, what he called war games, which are really exercises to make sure South Korean and American forces are kind of on top of their game and know how to fight North Korea in the event of any problems, nuclear problems or battles. But he called them war games. He said that he really didn't think that they were necessary and they were a big waste of money.
Well, and Kim finds them irritating, and we certainly don't want to irritate Kim.
And the big problem with this, among the many problems, is that South Korea didn't even know that Trump was going to throw that in. It came
sure
as
didn't.
A total surprise to the South Koreans, who are an ally of our country.
I have a hard time not laughing about this because it's so absurd. Canada is, according to this administration, a greater threat to our way of life than North Korea. This is the narrative being sold to us right now. And it feels bananas. And it's like, I need a reality check right now. Why is our executive branch right now much, much more comfortable making diplomatic relationships with North Korea than with Canada? Canada!
I think that Trump wants to distance himself from Trudeau because he knows how bad he looks next to Trudeau. And I think that when he sits next to Kim, he looks like, he's our savior. He's our hero for making this happen. Plus, it sounds really good. Look what I did.
I got
Kim into the same room as me. Nobody has done this. It's sort of this this giant, what's the word, like legacy. It's like a legacy for his presidency.
Oh my God.
Even though it's an empty legacy.
But no, I love what you just said. I want to return to what you just said
what
really quickly.
What did I just say?
About how he's much more comfortable standing next to Kim because he feels like the good guy in that situation.
Yep.
I think we have to really examine how the media loves to cover these kinds of stories, where they like to cover them as if they are novels, as if they're constructed narratives with a good guy and a bad guy and a narrative arc. And like, there's going to be a beginning, middle, and end to this. And with Kim, Trump gets to be the hero, and he gets to be the person who goes on this journey, and at the end of that journey is a victory for him.
Well, he's
but
allowing
with Trudeau,
right?
It's much more complicated than that because Trump knows how hated he is. Hopefully, I mean, I don't know. He gets a good news file every day. He might
he rips up the papers that have the bad news.
Yeah, there's a whole group of people whose job it is to tape together the documents that Trump tears up so that he will not be in violation of the Freedom of Information Act.
Following him with like a little bag or a bucket, all the bits of paper. The other thing is that Trump is getting to toot his own horn and say, I'm the only president who got to do this. No one had the confidence and the prowess that I did. No one was able to get Kim to come to the table.
No one was willing to overlook Kim's human rights violations to ask him to come to the table. By the way, Obama said he would meet with Kim, but he was then like delayed for it on Fox News, shockingly. Mm-hmm. He would meet with them without having any previous promise of denuclearization. Oh, what kind of foolish move is that? Oh, yeah, and now Trump does it, and it's like, elder statesman breaking new ground in American progress. Like, oh, yeah, you're making progress with North Korea.
On top
That's
of that,
really
Trump stormed out of the G7 summit, which was with our allies, to run over to Singapore and prep for his meeting with the dictator. So,
although he said he didn't have to prep for it that much.
Really?
Yeah.
He just knew what to do?
He was like, I didn't have to prep for
it
that much.
I'll just feel my way through it.
Ugh.
I had a question, which is, what is your least favorite thing about Kim Jong-un?
Ooh!
Your least favorite. Human rights violations,
the
haircut, the imprisoning, the killing
definitely
of family.
The haircut. No, okay, so I would say, I mean, obviously the human rights violations, but more specifically, the way that he, and more recently, the way that he's trying to kind of play this part of this, like, folksy party guy who's like super cool and misunderstood.
With a brogue, apparently, with an Irish brogue.
Yeah, I don't even know what. Like, he's trying to sell this image of himself as like, I'm just a cool guy. You guys just don't know me at all. But you are a monster who starves your people and murders your relatives.
And who imprisons up to three generations of families if there's a transgression from one member of the family. For example, if your radio dial is able to get maybe a station from China or from the West, and you are caught listening to that radio station that is not the government radio station in North Korea, you can be sent away, as can three generations of your family. Did you know?
Yeah.
And so the interesting thing, Trump showed Kim Jong-un a video of what life could be like if they make this agreement. Whereas
was it Kim, Sex in the City?
No.
Okay.
So Kim Jong-un, he knows how to play Trump. I would venture to say he knows how to play Trump. They can study Trump very clearly. He's transparent and see what makes him tick.
Trump's not a tough nut to crack.
No, no.
Guy's an idiot.
And you're just like, oh, you look so cute. But anyhow.
You are a very powerful man, Mr. Trump. Done.
Look at that hair. How did you do that? And then Kim Jong, accent. What was your accent?
How did you do that? It was like French.
What was
French.
That shimmy?
It was beautiful.
Kim Jong-un. Maybe was potentially played by our government. Maybe they were being smart and they knew that showing him a video of what the world could be, because in the dialogue of this was imagine a world, and it was sort of this idea that there are only a few people charged with changing the world and having an impact on the world, which completely strokes Kim Jong-un's ego.
Totally.
It's perfect
totally,
for him.
Totally.
So what's your least favorite thing about Trump?
I think his whole idea that like personality means everything. Personality is more important than intelligence. Personality is more important than compassion. Personality is more important than preparation or hard work. He thinks that if he's a cool guy and a popular guy and people like him,
that's what
he
matters.
Doesn't have to be held accountable to anything. He doesn't have to work hard to become a better person. Like, I find that very, very distressing. His kind of amoral love of himself.
It's lazy.
Yes.
And he thinks that, I guess because he got voted, you know, the popular vote, and he thinks it's a cult of personality. That's kind of how he operates, Trump. Yeah. That what he does will see us all through. But he kind of disregards all the history before.
Well, yeah, I mean, I would love to be able to say, like, what an idiot. But he won the fucking election on his personality with zero preparation. Like, look at this guy showing up to these debates with just bluster and bombast and bullying tactics.
And of course,
apparently
which we saw again because he walked out of the G7 and then he slammed Trudeau. And he said, basically, one of Trump's people said that there's a special place in hell for what Justin Trudeau said, which was, you know, that they are going to, Canada's not going to put up with the penalties without kind of retaliating in their own way. And then Trump blew up because his tiny, tiny, fragile ego got hurt.
So June is Pride Month. And I'm sure you know that because if you've gone to Burger King, Starbucks, Chipotle, Wells Fargo, you probably saw a big rainbow flag hanging out in front of the building, slapped on some merchandise. And on the one hand, that is fantastic because it is really, really exciting to see the mainstream acceptance of LGBTQIA culture. It's exciting to see businesses competing for these dollars in this business.
I mean, even 5 years ago, I think this is a very recent upsurge.
Yeah, kind of the corporate sponsorship of Pride is definitely a new evolution. And on the one hand, that's really, really exciting.
It's sort of like, welcome to the party. Now you get to be involved in all this next level.
It's like they show up at Pride and they're like, we want you to just embrace your identity as a trans woman and a Wells Fargo customer. And like, cool. That's like the fact that you see that's valuable is cool. However, so like any social movement, once it gets popular, it also gets profitable. And that's where we have to kind of start.
That's where me and Katie get cynical.
Yeah, that's where I get really, really cynical and spiky, like really, really fast. So when we talk about Pride and we talk about rainbows and we talk about corporations that are like slapping a rainbow on everything under the sun right now, you have to ask yourself, are these corporations actual allies to the LGBTQIA community?
Or are they lip service?
Or are they just showing up because they know that this is a popular movement to be a part of? It is not cool to be homophobic anymore. Yeah. But for, you know, the other 11 months out of the year, they're just gonna kind of do whatever the hell they want to without actually prioritizing the needs of the LGBTQIA community.
Now, I feel that it is wonderful that Pride is being embraced in large corporations. I don't know that would have happened 10 years ago, 5 years ago. So I'm a little less cynical about it in exchange for happiness that it's so mainstream now to identify as LGBTQ that the big corporations are hopping on. When you told me that Burger King had some rainbow stuff on their boxes, I said, wait, did you just say Burger King has it? Because that's
totally
giant.
That's huge.
Can you imagine from growing up, when we were growing up, if that would have ever happened?
No, Burger King didn't even have a veggie whopper when I was growing up. So this is like a huge step forward for
McDonald's
all humankind. Right. But here's the problem. If you take a look at a company like Wells Fargo.
Yeah.
Right. So Wells Fargo is all in on Pride. And they also fund private prisons that disproportionately incarcerate trans people of color. So the fact that this company wants their dollars but is not willing to then show up for them on a human rights front is highly, highly problematic. Not to mention, I mean, even though Pride is so mainstream in a lot of ways right now, we're kind of losing the thread of the narrative, which is that Pride now has this very corporate face on it. And even when it first began in the late 60s with the Stonewall riots, mm-hmm. Pride was sold as like a white man's cause. Like all of the pictures in the newspaper, the primary That's narratives, right. the heroes of the night that emerged were primarily white men. But it's really, really important to remember that Pride is not just about this one kind of person. Pride is about embracing this entire community and standing up for this entire community. And that's why it's I really have been shouting from the rooftops about Marsha Johnson and Sylvia Rivera, who were two trans women of color who helped to lead the Stonewall riots.
And I hadn't even heard of them.
Yes, exactly.
Well, because you told me.
Exactly. I mean, because in our culture, in our society, we're happy to look at social progress as long as there's a white man's face on it. You know yeah. what I mean? Like if a white man signs off on it, it's like, oh, great, no problem. If it's a black trans woman or a Puerto Rican drag queen, it's like, ooh, no, that's unsavory. And so at this point, we have to acknowledge, like, these are the roots of Pride. Or this woman, right. Marsha Johnson, and Sylvia Rivera, who were there on the night of the Stonewall riots.
How amazing would it be if Burger King or Wells Fargo actually had part of their ad campaign homage to these two?
That would
heroines.
Be amazing. That
Can you imagine in tribute to?
It would be amazing if a percentage of their profits from Pride went to
right.
trans equality and trans advocacy. Like that would be outstanding. So, but I really want to make sure that I am 100% pro Pride. I am 100% pro standing with our allies in the LGBTQIA community. This is 100% in my wheelhouse. I am against buying something from Target that has a rainbow on it, because Target knows how to capitalize on my empathy and my willingness to perform that empathy as an ally mm-hmm. during Pride, mm-hmm. right? So like buy a rainbow shirt, but take a couple extra minutes, go yes. on Etsy and find an actual seller who is a member of this community and support their business. Like that's the next step of
allyship.
Right,
that's the next step. So it's awesome yeah. that rainbows are mainstream for Pride. That is amazing and we're not saying that's not good. But if you want a next level, then you can figure out how you can donate, give your time, get the word out and support businesses who are living the LGBTQ experience.
It's also really, really important to remember that the LGBTQIA community is not like done. It's not like, oh, great, we're equal now. In addition to the...
What's IA?
IA is intersex and asexual. And so these communities are under active attack right now, not just legislatively, although certainly that. Mm-hmm. The HRC reported that in 2016, which is the last year that we have stats for, there was an increase in hate crimes that were related to gender identity or sexual orientation. Mm-hmm. And that is a small, like, they reported 6,121 hate crimes in that year. And that's actually probably a much smaller fraction than the number of crimes that were actually committed.
Right, because they go underreported.
They go underreported. And, like, local law enforcement is not required to report hate crimes to the federal government. They don't have to
do
that.
So it's probably a lot more.
It's probably a lot more. So this Pride, show up real. Support your local community and be a real ally.
You just heard Mouthy, Messy, Mandatory with Katie
and Ronit,
a Large Media production. That's L-A-R-J, Large. If you like this episode or want to follow up on anything we talked about, come find us at facebook.com/mouthymessymandatory or tweet at me, bro. yeah, that's a good one. I'm at Mouthy Podcast on Twitter. Thanks for listening.